my title is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, and I'll explain that as we get into it. If you saw Sig's talk this morning, you might have gotten a preview of the Green Belt, which is a name Malawi has adopted. And these pictures you might recognize if you're in the morning session as well. These are from Pedro Sanchez, who traveled through Malawi this year during the growing season. And on your left, you have a field that's around 1 ton per hectare, and on the right, another maize field that's going to yield about 3 tons per hectare. So just as you, to give you a visualization of what these numbers mean on the ground, I know it looks like there's a very diverse group here, but some of us just think about the United States or other high-yielding areas. So what I hope to convince you, or these are my three main points as I go through my talk, is that we've seen this national-scale subsidy work in Malawi, and I'll show you some more information on that. I come from a remote sensing background, so I was very intrigued by the challenge of studying smallholders with very coarse tools, and I think we can do that, so I'll hope to convince you of that as well. And lastly, we look at the interactions between the nitrogen drought in this part of the world and water droughts and their effects on yield. This is a global data set by Chad Monfreda, and there's a number of these global data sets. I was at a conference a few weeks ago, and everybody was showing, oh, how cool their global data sets were. You know, and of course, you draw your eye to the place where you work, and then you want to tell them how wrong it is. It doesn't hold up where you work. Well, so, you know, you can see from this map, sub-Saharan Africa has quite a large percent of croplands. And here is a map of approximately the maize areas. And again, you can see sub-Saharan Africa showing up there. And then when you look at the maize yields, with yellow being less than 3 tons per hectare, I think there's about 12 pixels that light up across southern and eastern Africa there. So really emphasizing the low yield, especially on this global scale. This is a figure I put together and is kind of in progress. So if you have comments later, please find me at the meeting. What I realized is that we usually think about the nitrogen cycle just in terms of stocks and reservoirs, and we've been working a lot in our group with human systems. So I sort of took the ecosystem services, which are listed here in green, and the constituents of human well-being, which are listed in blue, and superimposed them with the nitrogen cycle, actually explicitly putting humans in as one of the stocks and causes of fluxes of the nitrogen cycle. And highlighted at the top is just emphasizing the case for a lot of sub-Saharan Africa, where we have a lot of removal of nitrogen in crops through human activities, through deforestation, changes in land cover, and such. So we've ended up with these large nitrogen deficits, which we saw some in the previous talk. So Malawi has been touted as the first successful African Green Revolution. I guess I should put Green Revolution 2.0, as we've been saying in this meeting today. And they have two different programs right now that are aimed at increasing crop yields and addressing food security. So the one I'm focusing on is called the Agricultural Input Subsidy Program. And that was mentioned in some of the talks this morning. It started in 2005, and this year 1.6 million smallholder farmers, in this harvest year, 1.6 million smallholder farmers received this subsidy. That's about two-thirds of the smallholder farmers in Malawi, and smallholder farmers produce about 80% of the total food consumed in Malawi. So this is a very sizable program, and it's reaching a number of people. Under the subsidy in its current form, and it has adapted over time and hopefully will continue to, but each farmer or farm family gets one voucher that is exchangeable for 2 bags of fertilizer, one which is usually a basal dressing and then a top dressing, a few kilos of either hybrid or open pollinating variety seed, and a flex voucher, which is redeemable for a legume of their choice. And if you saw Siglinda Snap's talk this morning, there's a lot of important reasons to incorporate these legumes, but the idea with the flex is that farmers have their choice of groundnuts or more shrub-like pigeon peas and a number of other legumes. Now, the Greenbelt program is actually focused on irrigating a buffer about 20 kilometers within Lake Malawi, as well as intensifying the agriculture there through other ways. And I was very interested, as you drive around Malawi, you see these huge billboards that say Malawi, the Greenbelt of Africa, and there's this emphasis in increasing food production, and a lot of that has already happened through the agricultural input subsidy program. So I was kind of struck with this idea. Is Malawi already on the way to being the green belt, even without the heavy infrastructure and irrigation that would be needed to achieve the quote-unquote green belt program? So that's why I sort of borrowed that title. This is also some data on the bottom here, borrowed from Pedro, just showing the costs of the input subsidy versus delivering food aid. So Malawi sort of went against traditional wisdom of allowing other donor countries to provide food aid to address food security and actually growing the food themselves through the subsidy program. So this graph, just for reference, in red is maize yields over time for the United States, and in blue, comparatively stagnant, are the maize yields in Malawi. In that little squiggle in green, just for reference, is Mwandama Village, which Generos was just producing or just showing some data from. And in 2005 was the establishment of both the Millennium Villages Project and the Agricultural Input Subsidy Program. So we have this local scale intervention and also a national scale intervention, both happening so that we see the impacts in the 2006 harvest. What I have highlighted here as well are our drought years. So our last drought was in 2005, and it just so happens, I guess I got lucky this year. Maybe we shouldn't think of it that way. Some other people were not so lucky because of the drought. But an opportunity to actually evaluate the fertilizer input subsidy under drought conditions. And these droughts, I should point out, may not be true meteorological droughts, but they're typically a stop in the rains during the rainy season lasting a week or 2 weeks at a time that affects food production very drastically, because it often when these dry spells occur, it's at key times for pollination and other events with the maize crop. So that's kind of showing you on a very aggregate level that this agricultural input subsidy program seems to work. And my next challenge, as I said, my background is remote sensing, was to try and disaggregate that a little bit. So bring us more of the spatial information. On the bottom left is a picture of Malawi, and if you can see closely, I'm not sure it's big enough to the people in the back of the room, but I think Malawi kind of looks like a patchwork quilt. You have a number of smallholders doing a lot of different things, but it turns out most of them are planting maize, and the timing, the phenology and stuff such of the maize is very uniform because of our unimodal rains. So on the right, we have a satellite image taken in the dry season, and it's showing the percent green vegetation per pixel. So the darker green areas have more vegetation and the lighter green areas have less vegetation during the dry season. And zooming in, you can see what sort of a typical densely settled agricultural landscape looks like in Malawi. So it's very coarse resolution. You couldn't pick out your house, you couldn't pick out your farm. Each of these pixels is about a kilometer by a kilometer on a side. So sort of a blunt tool for understanding very fine scale things. However, what happens is, this is now, if we take, I don't know if I can go back here. Okay, if we take one of these pixels and we literally track it through time, you're basically watching green leaf phenology or cropland phenology over time. And crops cover a majority of the landscape here. So our pixels, the dominant signal the satellite is receiving is the crop phenology signal. From these crops. So on the right, I'm contrasting some work I did a few years ago in Mato Grosso, Brazil, where we're talking about very large-scale, industrial, very uniform agriculture. And these plots on the right are just stacked by one for offset. So you have a vegetation index near zero during the dry season when you just have dirt and such covering the ground, and during the wet season you have these soybeans growing in a very, very uniform cover. So in Malawi, it was much to our joy to find that we could actually detect crop phenology for areas we knew were in cropland, and that that was very different than the sort of noisy phenology that doesn't change much over the plantation forests and wetland areas. So this is encouraging. It's something no one's really thought about, studying at least smallholders when they're very uniform and very densely settled, even with these coarse tools, which you can see the advantages. We now have 10 years of data where we can look at crop phenology, and maybe some of you in the room know better than I how crop phenology can relate to yields, above ground biomass, crop cover, and other things. So now I want to use these tools and actually look at the impacts of the subsidy input program, and the impacts of this year's drought. So I'm comparing two sites here, and what I've done is actually averaged a number of pixels over the sites just to represent it as one line. So you can see the dark green is our intervention site, which was presented before our Mondama village, so it's a Millennium Village, and a non-intervention site. So both of these sites are receiving fertilizer inputs. The quote-unquote non-intervention site is receiving the national fertilizer subsidy inputs, which I believe averaged out to about 25 kilos a nitrogen per hectare, whereas the intervention site was using the same application of fertilizer but was giving it uniformly to all farm families, not to the selected quote-unquote worst off as in the national program for the non-intervention site. So you can see the phenologies are fairly similar for the crops, but there are of course subtle differences through time, and I'm going to go through that a little bit more. One other thing I wanted to show was rainfall for these two sites, which we can observe with the Tropical Rainfall Measuring Mission, which is another one of our satellite sensors. And this is showing the rainfall anomalies. So for the 2010 harvest year, this is the deviation basically from the long-term mean. So you see that usually the wet season would have a positive anomaly and the dry season would have a slight negative anomaly. And in fact, what we see here in December and January of this year is that our wet season is anomalously low in rainfall. And likewise, that happened again in March. Another point I want to convey here is just that the rainfall patterns are fairly similar across these two sites. If anything, the non-intervention site gets a little bit better rainfall. It's a little bit closer to Lake Malawi and experiences lake effect rains, as you would say. So now if we look at the anomaly in phenology and the anomaly in rainfall, it's kind of what you would expect. And this is what we see all across sub-Saharan Africa, and in many, many rain-fed systems, is that the vegetation follows or lags the precipitation. So that curve probably is not surprising. What really shocked us was how drastically different the intervention site, so the Millennium Village site, was from this non-intervention site. So the very uniform application of fertilizer across the entire Millennium Village site. This year, the yields were a little lower. Genero showed since the Millennium Village started, they were yielding around 4, a little bit higher than 4 tons per hectare. This year, they were a little damaged by the shortfall in rain. But compared to this control site, the non-intervention site, the yields are actually looking really great. So there's a lot of physiological reasons, and I'm sure a lot of people here can explain those reasons, but it makes sense that with sufficient or closer to sufficient amounts of nitrogen that the maize in the intervention site was better able to access the available soil moisture that was in the ground as those plants were able to set deeper roots and such. So just to remind you of the points I'm hopefully have conveyed to you is that we know on a national scale that this fertilizer program works, but it's sort of the point by point or more case study type approach that we need to really tie together inputs and yield responses when we're thinking a lot across large landscapes. It's one thing to say a bunch of fertilizer went out and we know yields went up, but let's work at getting closer to actually coupling where was that yield response on the ground. And lo and behold, much to my joy, that we can actually study these smallholders with very coarse tools, and I think that there's a lot of power there yet to be exploited. Just to conclude, I think some of the things that we need to start working on is the next agronomic revolution, and I think Pedro alluded to this a little bit in his talk this morning, but providing information and resources for smallholder farmers that involves some degree of precision. So with the new African soils digital map, we'll be able to provide better tuned information through extension agents to farmers, and hopefully as our climate models and such improve. It's very exciting that Malawi's transitioned and is now offering flex vouchers for legumes in addition to fertilizer and seed inputs, and hopefully we'll continue to develop organic inputs and new approaches to help these small farmers. This last picture is from Charlie Vorismardi's recent paper showing threats to water security for humans. And if you can zoom in, and you probably can't see it in the back of the room, but Malawi is lit up sort of bright yellow orange there, meaning there's a high risk and to the water available to humans there. So I think we're at a point, we know nitrogen loading is going to happen in Africa, but we're at a point where we don't have a great understanding of where it's all going to go and what the environmental impacts could be. So now's the time to start studying those things and adapting management before those problems arise. Thank you.
Do you want to take one question?
Sure.
We have time for one question. In the back of the room.
Besides nitrogen, what other inputs could the intervention and the non-intervention side
work? Besides nitrogen? So the two sites were basically the Millennium Village was following the same recommendations that the National Fertilizer Input Subsidy Program was using. So each farmer received the same inputs, the fertilizer, hybrid seeds, legumes, et cetera. In the Millennium Villages, they were doing it to every single farmer, whereas on a national scale, extension agents were used to identify the neediest farm families, and a subset of farmers in any given village were receiving that. And we actually have the data from Malawi on where all those vouchers went, which we've been putting into a GIS system, so we can really start to track where everything's going, and then also correlating that to yield responses. So great question, thanks.